Off the Ball, GAA.
I mean, there was a lot of made of Congress at the weekend, and yes, a lot of different things came out of Congress. But for me, to be honest with you, I won't say it's off the ball. I think it's off the wall in terms of something like that coming into hurling.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Now Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
The Saturday Panel on Off the Ball.
With Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the IRFU.
This is News Talk.
And you're very welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5. You can WhatsApp us, folks, 0879 180 180. And the Saturday Panel on Off the Ball this week brought to you by Optimum Nutrition. We're delighted to team up with Optimum Nutrition, the world's number one performance nutrition brand, as they launched their new global campaign, The Optimum Advantage. With over 35 years at the top of performance nutrition, trusted by the world's best athletes, and a growing partnership with the IRFU, Optimum Nutrition are right at the heart of Irish rugby. We're reviewing last night's Six Nations match between Ireland and Wales. Ireland won a hard-fought battle 27-17, securing the bonus point with tries by Jacob Stockdale, Jack Crowley, Jack Conan and Jamie Osborne. On the panel, two former Ireland wingers, Dennis Hickey, who scored 29 international tries, in the ex-Grand Slam winner, Alison Miller. And also we have the Irish Daily Mail rugby writer, Hugh Farley. Hugh, Alison and Dennis, you're all very welcome.
Thanks, John.
Thanks very much.
How are you?
Great, folks. You're very welcome to the studio. Folks, we'd like your opinions, your rants, your comments, your questions, your positivity, 0879 180 180. Hugh Farrelly, I believe you're very positive. You've woken up on the wrong side of the right side of the bed for the once today.
No. Like, I've been in here a few times over the years, John, as you know, and I always felt like Farrell wasn't quite getting it, you know, in terms of my World Cup obsession. And I was in here after the French game. And it was very doom and gloom. If you remember, it was talk about recession and terminal decline and all this kind of stuff. Well, in fact, what happened then, I think that French game could be viewed in time as one of the best things that's ever happened, because he's ripped up the script. It's not about winning what's in front of him anymore. He's looking at options. He's rolling the dice. I think his selection since then has been superb. The Italy game, I was disappointed with the reaction to the Italy game, because I'd have been very positive about that because of the players that he looked at, and that they managed to win against a very good Italian performance. You know, it was a good, and I would see this game last night on the same level. Far from perfect, lots to work on, but broadening the scope the whole time. And if you listen to the language coming out of Caelan Doris and Farrell, it's all about we're on a journey, we're going places, you know, it's good to win along the way. Far removed from what we've had up to now, which is like win what's in front of you, go to the same guys all the time. So I really think the penny's dropped for Farrell, and we can analyse the game and all that. There are areas to work on all that, but he's widening options. He's looking at his depth, and it's building very encouragingly towards next year's World Cup.
Alison Miller, are you glass half full?
Well, I'm with you in that I would always take in the opinion that we need to build depth, but it's good to see the players being rotated in and out. To be honest, I don't know if I'm positive or I'm negative. I'm just somewhere in the middle. But I think it's really good that we're not setting the house on fire at the moment. I think that's sometimes dangerous leading into a World Cup, and people get their expectations up. But it's good to see the depth, and it's good to see, you know, the rotation that's going along. It was a good win without being brilliant. And I suppose a team like Wales are always going to be very dangerous with the pressure they have on them, you know, with individual players and contracts, potential futures. So I mean, what they lacked for in their attacking shape, they showed a lot of heart. They showed like brilliant scramble defence, brilliant defence at times. Some, you know, key defensive moments like the intercept, which probably prevented us, you know, putting a nice lead in. So there was big moments in the game. And I'm neither half full or half empty. I'm probably where it's nice to be.
You're just in purgatory, rugby purgatory.
Rugby purgatory, that's probably it, yeah.
Just think of the familiar names and faces that were not around last night, Dennis Hickey. So Keenan, Hanson, O'Brien, that's Tommy O'Brien, Henshaw, Aki, Lowe, Casey, Porter, Sheehan, Paddy McCarthy, Van der Fleer. A lot of people who weren't involved. Baird. So where are you on the tumbler of glass?
Well, I certainly think that there was a... I think people were mixing up rebuilding with decline, because they have to do what they're doing now, and I think they're being quite effective at it because they're winning, with the exception of obviously the first match where, you know, a number of things didn't go well for them. But at the same time, you know, ironically, the thing that people were most worried about in that first match was the scrum, which was pretty solid actually in the French match, which has been suffered a little bit more from the changes they've made in the subsequent games, because they have had a lot of chopping and changing in that. Obviously, Porter's out, but they've got through all those games and they've won them. So there's three or four more props now in the mix who wouldn't have got any international time in the last 3 years, really, except in cases where there was, you know, injuries. So, and I think that goes for a number of different positions. So to rebuild, they have to do what they're doing. And that is going to do, I think that's going to impact a few things. First of all, the flow and the rhythm of the team, you know, is changing. And at times they're not as fluid or maybe as cohesive as they would be if they picked the same 15 guys that they were paying, you know, that they had their go-to guys for the last couple of years. So that is going to, I think, affect the flow of the game and how they play. And probably, I think, for example, the scrum overall is possible. I don't know a huge amount about scrumming. You won't be surprised to hear that. But, you know, that's something that's clearly the entire unit is and the cohesiveness of the unit is critical in scrums. And, you know, it's a lot easier, I think, for people to single out individual players in the scrum and say, oh, this guy's had a tough time, or you know, this particular player hasn't done as well. But that very much is I think would be a function of the changes that they have made in the scrum. But also, I think Ireland will be benefit for that, because we have been very reliant on four front row players for the last 3 or 4 years, and now coming towards the end of this Six Nations, there's two or three guys who've got Six Nations experience, but they've also acquitted themselves very well in the Six Nations.
You were at the game. I thought Wales were, would it be fair to say at the stadium, Wales were like gave it everything for the jersey, and we just overwhelmed them ultimately?
Yeah, like I think they were, we started as well in this game as we did last week, you know, really started very strongly, and you would have been forgiven for thinking after Cone went over for the try that was ultimately disallowed, you're thinking this could be 50 points or 60 points. Because Ireland started so well, and Wales just were not in the game. But obviously, when, you know, there was a big swing when that try was disallowed, and then all of a sudden you got to half time and Wales were still in the game, very much in the game on the scoreboard. But it didn't necessarily bear what was going on the pitch, but it did tell the story that Wales were building into the game. The problem for Wales, as I see it, is that they, from numbers 4 to 8, they don't have enough big men. That's that's their biggest problem. Like when you just watch the game live, I haven't been in the game in quite a while, but to see just the impact of their ball carriers, they just struggle to have that really big impact that a lot of the other teams have. And Ireland are probably just on the right side of having, they don't have the huge size of South Africa or France, but Ireland are just have a few more bigger guys. And this has been a problem for Wales for the last couple of years. And you could just see it as the game wears on, because it's not about effort and it's not about commitment. Like the two Welsh second rows, like just their work rate last night, just watching them and the back row, the amount of work they put in, but it's just the physics of it. After a while, they struggle to access the game if you can't break through, if you can't wear down the opposition's defence because just of your ball carrying ability. And that's ultimately what has, in my view, kind of hobbled Wales in these games. But there was no shortage of heart and there was no shortage of commitment. Their defence was really good. They really had done a, a huge, they seem to have done a huge amount of analysis, certainly on the Irish attack. Ireland's handling skills got them through, you know, particularly for the Osborne try. You know, the Welsh defence was, you know, they knew they were able to pick the runners. Ireland were struggling to pick the holes, but just very quick hands got them through it. But I think Wales really committed themselves and really acquitted themselves very bravely over the 80. But they ran out of steam a little bit as a result in that last 10 minutes, I thought, because their back five had just done so much carrying and they were just struggling to keep the fuel in the tank.
That was the good for you from Ireland last night.
Tell you who I've been impressed with. I was going to pick a winger, but Balakoon. And I think a lot of people talk about his speed, but for me, it's his leg drive post-contact. It's unbelievable. If you watch the first try, he goes to Balakoon and he interests 2, 3, 4 defenders every time with his leg drive. He's getting off his wing, which is obviously the two wingers have done that. But also, I suppose, Stockdale's performance as well. The line for his try was beautiful, you know, just against the grain. And as well for Osborne's try, he's off his wing distributing the knocks. It might have been a forward pass, but look, the try was a try. But to see the wingers roam with that freedom and get involved, and I think, you know, Stockdale, I don't think, has the maybe takeoff pace he used to have, but I think he can evolve and be a different type of winger. So for to see Stockdale score again on the 5th minute, to see it go from width to width, so Balakoon stretched them back out to the other wing, and to come back and see these wingers, because I think it's something, you look at the man beside me, he had huge pace, and it's so important. Just the difference between pace and not pace. So, you know, Balakoon stretches them, the defence are chasing, they're under pressure, and that's huge. Someone a little bit slower, that doesn't happen. It sounds so simple, but it's something that I don't know why in this country we have speed in this country. You look at our women's relays, we look at our athletes. I don't know if there is the way we play in our schools rugby that's very systematic. So maybe the guy that gets picked over the fast guy, or is it that speed is such an advantage, but it can be an inhibitor too because your core skills don't develop. So to see that pace on the pitch from Balakoon, to see him, you know, get off his wing and try things, you know, he's flick around the back
to
Frawley, yeah, pretty late on. So to see that, he's still able in the modern game, look, he's playing against Wales or Wales, but to run an arc on a guy, like, there's not many guys that can do that. And I remember talking to Conor Murray about him before, and he's like, he can just run around people. So to see him and to see Stockdale perform at the level that they did last night, look, it's Wales, but you can play who you are in front of them. So he excites me, Balakoon, because I think he'll get better with more confidence. But he's to get the ball in a little bit of space for him and to get that leg drive in the metres after contact, to put 3 or 4 guys in the ground, it's absolutely huge. It's so simple, but it's huge. So it's something definitely that we've been lacking. And I think Stockdale can. I don't think he's going to score the tries he did in his earlier career, but I think he can evolve into a different type of winger that gets off his wing, you know, be a line runner, distribute a little bit more, you know, that against the grain line. He's such a physical ball carrier. So for me to see the two guys play like that and to go roaming, to have that freedom, is great, because I think it's something that we need.
Before we get to Hugh on this, as a former winger as well, Dennis, you got, well, save Tommy O'Brien's fish, James Lowe's fish, Mac Hansen's fish. You got the two lads that played last night. Where are you on the winger picture now? What do you want to see from the Irish wingers as a legendary winger yourself?
Well, it's certainly probably the paciest selection we've had for quite a while. And they're all quite different players. I think Balakoon in particular this year, if you go back to the Wales game, the Italy game, one of the things that, you know, coming out of that loss to France, there was a lot of question marks, and even some of the more experienced guys who the team looks to take them through, you could probably, confidence was under pressure. And it was some of the guys like Balakoon in particular, and Stuart McCluskey and a few guys who haven't been in the team, they're playing with a lot of confidence week in, week out for Ulster. And that can have been in teams where that can, say, maybe guys who have either been out or maybe are, they don't have the same experience, but they're just on form at that time. And that can just give guys who are way more experienced, who are usually responsible for picking the team up, just that extra bit of lift, gives them something to follow, takes the pressure off some of the, let's say, more experienced guys, because because they can follow a little bit more as opposed to just having to lead all the time. And I thought a lot of the Ulster guys have brought that, and Balakun in particular. So I think Balakun and Tommy O'Brien at the moment are playing excellent rugby when they play. I think they're a really good combination. Both of them have built a lot on their skills. Like Balakun in particular, when he started, he was a lot lighter, and he was seen maybe as someone who was great with the ball going forward, but you know, didn't have the same level of completeness in his game. But he's suffered some injuries, he's had some setbacks, but what you can do in those sort of periods is you can get some more size, you can develop your skills, and he has come back, particularly this year, with, you know, he's added a couple of extra dimensions to his game. So he's probably in pole position, I would say, after this. Lowe brings something different because he is a great ball player. He's also got a great kick, so he gives him a kicking option, as does Tom, as does obviously Osborne, but he gives him that extra dimension out wide, and he's also excellent at offload, and he's great at drawing defenders to him and finding some space and creating some offloads, to which, you know, Ireland have been very good, particularly the players that they have, like Gibson Parker, who's able to track the ball. So, you know, those three, I'd say, are probably in, you know, probably the top of the mix. I haven't seen enough of the Stockdale. Obviously, he's, you know, he played in the first match and he played again last night. He had a really solid game last night, I thought. But I would say Balakun, O'Brien and Lower would be, for me, from what I've seen so far, would be the men in possession.
This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk, the Saturday panel on rugby with Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller and Hugh Farrelly. Arsenal have scored again to go 2-1 up on Mansfield in the FA Cup fifth round. What did you take from a positive then in terms of personnel or people you saw last night in the team that did well for you, Hugh?
Just to follow up on Alison and Dennis, because it's fascinating to hear two wingers at their level talk about this, because I've been watching rugby in Ireland a long time and we've never embraced pace.
Simon Gagan,
but how much do we use Simon Gagan? He sat out there on the wing for most of the 90s begging for ball, and I would even say Bevan Parsons on the women's team at the moment, I'd be designing backline moves to get the ball to her because she's lethal. Like Dennis set the bar incredibly high in terms of the pace he brought to the team, but there's been a tendency to go for the conservative option. I would say the likes of Shane Horgan, Andrew Trimble, these guys, great players but not out and out speedsters. Mac Hansen isn't an out and out pace guy, Lowe isn't. And there's been options, so it's great to see them embrace it now, because I really think it gives you an extra edge. There was a guy playing for Connacht 10 years ago called Matt Healy, who was dynamite. Mm. And we never went from, I think Joe gave him one cap off the bench in the tour to South Africa. I might have wrong, I don't want to disparage Joe, but I think he didn't do a ruck clean out properly or something and he was discarded. He was lethally fast, and there's been a tendency to play it safe with the wingers over the years. I mean, I'll take you way back to the 70s. There was a guy called Vinnie Becker, who was a sprinter. He's played for Lansdowne, and they gave him one cap, but they didn't trust him. Alison made the point that they think your other skills aren't up to it, you know, so...
Maybe sometimes, like, to jump in, sometimes their skills aren't up to it, because...
But that could be worked
about
on, surely.
Speed is, as I said, it's a great advantage, but it can be an inhibitor too, because you get away with doing things at a certain level that you wouldn't be able to do at the high level. So it's up to coaches to push those players at underage level that have the speed to go, like you look at BLBRA.
Yeah.
He is so well-rounded with the pace, nearly undefendable because he's able to kick, defends well, he's really good aerially. So it's kind of up to coaches to challenge those speed players. I know you can run around, I know you can do this at this level, but I want you to do the thing that's the right thing in the moment to develop you long-term. So I think that sometimes happens. It happens in all sports. I definitely lack skills in every sport I played because I had speed. And sometimes I was able to do things that other people weren't, but sometimes I wasn't able to do a thing that someone else could do simply because of speed. So we need coaches to push those players that have the pace to develop their whole core skills so that they are able to play at this highest level and still have that pace, but still be able to play the whole game like your BLBRAs,
but
you know?
The success of Balakun and Tommy O'Brien, as Dennis says, surely that should be now a concerted policy. Identify the pace and work on it so that your fielding skills, your defence. Balakun for the try, the Reece Carey try, I would be interested in your take on this. I felt he was right to stay out. We have a lot of examples over the years, particularly with Lowe, where he comes in off the wing and they score on the outside. So he got burnt by a prop, which isn't a great look. But was he right to stay out there and trust in the guy inside?
Getting burnt by a prop is I'm not sure. Like, but I looked at it a couple of times this morning. So what he appeared to be doing is obviously Reece Carr hit a man outside him. And Osborne was coming across. So Osborne, you know, between the two of them, maybe if Balakun maybe if there was more chat, it's very easy to say that in the stand. But I didn't get the impression from the position that Balakun took with that he knew that Osborne was where he was. So it's on the laws of probability, you've got a prop and a winger. You're going to think to yourself, right, there will be cover coming across on the inside.
Yeah.
So chances are, if I step in, the cover has longer to go to get to the wing, and most things being equal, I'm sure he was backing the cover to pick up.
So you would really
carry in the
that.
Inside. No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
As it happens, though, the cover on the inside was Tadhg Furlong. So actually, there was a gap, and obviously
he didn't make it across.
Yeah, he didn't make it across, and Reece Carey showed tremendous pace, like serious pace from 35 yards.
Yeah.
It was a great try. Really, really great try. Everyone where I was sitting, all supporters were on their feet. Like, it was a great try from a player who's had a really, really good tournament.
Mm.
He's the guy, I think, famously, who Warren Gatland left out of his World Cup squad. Because of his size, he said it was fitness. He turned up, he wasn't fit enough for the preseason camp, and kind of garroted him, I think, pretty publicly. excuse me. But he... But he's really performed in this championship. He's their go-to in a number of different, you know, short penalty moves. He defended really well last night as well. He put in some really big hits. Mm. I think he was unlucky not to be man of the match, I thought, last night, because he actually had a big shift beyond the 50 minutes. They left him on for longer than that, and he was playing really well, because he's a big man carrying a lot of weight. A lot of size, you know, but he really put himself around. So to last that long, himself and Tadhg Furlong, obviously two very, very powerful, large guys, put in big shifts last night, I thought, you know, and I thought Reece Carey was excellent. So it was a well-taken try, but getting to, I veered off course a bit there. I think what Balakun did was the correct,
yeah,
I think. It just didn't look great at one point, but I think it was the right decision.
Jack Conan, man of the match for you?
Jack Conan, I would say, I could go on a bit of a rant here now. I think he's probably been one of our most consistent players over the last 6 or 7 years. And I don't want to get too strong, but...
Don't on the radio.
No, but I kind of resent the fact he doesn't have more caps. I thought we indulged CJ Stander for far too long, who was a great warrior, blah-de-blah, and put his effort in and all that, but he's very route one, number eight. Conan's a baller, like, Conan's a footballer. Far more rounded player, and I think he was kept in the background for too long because we became so dependent on Stander, who was a fine player, but nowhere near Cole in terms of skills. He was a work rate, he was a workhorse, Stander. Then he stepped off and went straight back to South Africa, and now we see what we were missing with Conan. I thought Conan was exceptional. The problem, Conan's one of a group of core players in this team, in Tadhg Byrne, Furlong, Gibson Park, Ringrose Henshaw, Aki, who are all in their 30s now, and we have to make sure that they're managed between here and autumn of next year, because he is exceptionally clear. I thought he was really good last night.
Was he your man of the match, Jack Conan?
He had a very, very strong game, I thought, last night. He tackled heroically. Like, he really put in a big he put in a very big performance defensively, and he did lead for the front, I thought, with the ball. I think, you know, there's trying to always find the best combination in the back row that Ireland has seems to be challenging. How would I qualify that is that when they pick a back row with Conan and like they did last night, you think, yeah, that's a really good back row. And then they change it around and they go, yeah, that's a really good back row. Mm. So they really have four very good, like four go-tos at the moment in the back row, and they're obviously mixing things up. Having Conan and six and Doris at eight and vice versa, swapping that around is they seem to just go. They seem to have a good enough balance on how they pick. I thought Conan had a really strong game last night.
Was Balakun your player of the match then?
No, he wasn't. Even though he's a winger, but yeah, like when I look back, I rewatched the game again today. I suppose no one, he did stand out, but it wasn't a game where you go, definitely, 100% has to be whoever. And I did actually have the exact same thought as you, watching the game going, how has this guy not got more starts for Ireland or, you know, Leinster even? And that did strike me as one thing that struck me.
Sorry, Alison, he's 6 consecutive tests for the Lions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like.
Back to back. And that's the ultimate judgment.
And when you've said it there, I literally had that thought watching it today. Yeah. How is this guy? He's such a complete player. He's got such a good skill level. His ability to carry from static. He got a ball yesterday statically, and the power on the ground that he made, that's so hard to do. It's so difficult to do. You know, his ability around the breakdown, his passing skills.
He's a key man on the line out for them as well. Key man on the line out for them last
so well rounded, and you would ask question. Why? But I suppose he's gotten the opportunity now, and you look at their back row, and are you picking a back row then? Are they picking a back row maybe to, like a menu, you're playing England, this back row, or we're playing France, and maybe this back row. Is that the way they're going at it? Maybe that's the way to look at it, or...
They also pick the back row over an 80 minutes. You know, they know the impact he has coming off the bench, and they have to decide what they do with 7 and 8 after 50 minutes and how the game is going. So I think that's how they look at it. I'm not sure they look at it as so much as starts or off the bench. I just think, you know, they know they're all going to be playing at some point.
Okay, got to take a break here for news. Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller and Hugh Farrelly on the Saturday panel on Ireland against Wales last night and rugby in general. And Arsenal are about to win the cup match against Mansfield. Eberechi Eze scored to put them 2-1 up. Text before we go to the break. Lads, was it the game last night? The same old atmosphere issues still prevail. Surrounded by Welsh in the south stand, completely outshouted the Irish. That sweet Caroline got the loudest roar of the night, says it all. The Irish rugby fans on the road are great for their support. Those in the Aviva, not so much, says John in Dublin. Do you have a view on that, folks? You're at the game. 087-9180-180 is our WhatsApp number. We're back after the news.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
With Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the IRFU.
This is News Talk.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you 3 to 5. The Saturday panel on Off the Ball this week is brought to you by Optimum Nutrition. We're delighted to team up with Optimum Nutrition, the world's number one performance nutrition brand, as they launch their new global campaign, The Optimum Advantage. With over 35 years at the top of performance nutrition, trusted by the world's best athletes and a growing partnership with the IRFU, Optimum Nutrition are right at the heart of Irish rugby. You want to WhatsApp as you can, 087-9180-180. On last night's game and Irish rugby, we beat Wales 27-17. Delighted to have two of our finest ever wingers, Dennis Hickey and Alison Miller, in studio with Hugh Farrelly, the rugby writer of the Irish Daily Mail. We got a WhatsApp in here for you, Dennis. Guys, how do we fix the goal kicking problem? Crowley missed 2 very gettable kicks last night. Prendergast has also missed kicks in the championship. Finn Russell will crucify us.
I don't think it takes a huge amount of analysis to realise that Ireland's goal kicking isn't where it needs to be. And it's going to be a problem at some point. You get away with it, and then where you get caught in something like that is a semi final of the World Cup or quarter final of the World Cup, or that's when it actually matters. And you can eke out these sort of games where Ireland have built good leads, but I was not a place kicker, luckily, because it requires a huge amount of concentration, huge amounts of technique and a huge amount of practice, but one certainly gets a sense that the issues that the two incumbents are having are probably more to do on the mental side or concentration side than technique. They're both fine kickers, and the kicks they're missing are not kicks that, you know, that are not gettable for them, kickers of their caliber. So therefore, you would have to say it's probably down to something that's not maybe technique related, but I'm only speculating. Clearly, I don't know. They're both youngish players. Obviously, Prendergast is younger, so they have that side of their game to still develop, the mental side, the concentration. People probably forget that Johnny Sexton, at a point in time in his career when he was a start, there was question marks asked, I remember, about his kicking it in some of the really crucial moments of the game. But, you know, towards the second half of his career, that was all put to bed. His ability to win games with really important kicks was not something that people were questioning. So they've also got to develop that part of their game as well. They're both young players. I'm sure from Farrell's perspective, he certainly won't be happy, because you know they're not happy, and I'm sure Johnny Sexton, who's now the coaching kicker, is also not going to be happy. But they've got to develop that part of their game as well, not just the technique side, and maybe they're just not quite there yet. But
when you play with David Humphreys or Ronan O'Gara or say Felipe Contepomi, did you have maybe at times in your mind, oh, that's just over, they're going to just going to make it all the time?
Well, I would say probably, I would say, you know, like Humps, when I was playing, he was probably more towards the second half of his career, and he had just a huge amount of confidence, very experienced, he's a very assured sort of guy. And then Ronan had, you know, he just never had an issue really with his technique. He was very, very mentally strong. And he's spoken clearly afterwards about how he, you know, some of the dread he feared, particularly in those early games, standing up to make those kicks. But he also had games where, you know, he still talks about looking back on kicks that he wished he'd got, like that. Obviously, the final of the European final was a famously. But again, you have got to grow into that as well. I think they have to grow into that. I think it's probably not fair to expect guys in the start of their careers to have the same level of consistency and stats as players like Finn Russell towards the end of the career. Again, at the start of his career, that was the big question mark. Didn't get the big kicks in the big matches. That was the big thing that was said about him. Now, of course, he's the more experienced player, and so that there's no doubt that the situation that the based on what we've seen so far in the tournament, our supporters couldn't probably are justified in feeling a little bit anxious around, you know, Ireland's maybe plate kicking is not where it needs to be. But it's also part of the development and of the skills of both those players.
Like you see Crowley's, the try he scores, I mean, misses after that, you can actually see him, I watch it on TV, you can actually see him out of breath. So physically he's under pressure, you can see him, he's walking and he's rushing back to take the conversion. So then you ask yourself the question, I'm sure they do, I'm not there to watch them train, but you know, putting yourself under pressure while you're practicing and I suppose mirroring, like I suppose, you know, like the hooker has been... You know, heart rate up, you're having to go, you have to concentrate, like a bit like this is the biathlon in the Winter Olympics where they're skiing and they have to bring their heart rate down to shoot. So, like, it's mental, but it looked a bit physical last night that he was physically under pressure before he got his team and had to kick, and it obviously didn't go over. But there's definitely a mental side to, because the one that he missed right in front of the post, you actually see on the TV that the ref says something like, I think it was 10 or 8 seconds or something, and he's under pressure and he's
the shot clock was on and he was under pressure,
so that's changed from probably, you know, a few years ago when we didn't have that. So they're under more pressure physically. Well, Crowley's under pressure physically, he scores that try himself and it's after a few phases, and then he's physically heart rate up. So that's an interesting part of it, is do they need to do a little bit more kicking when they're under pressure to bring that heart rate down to get that mental side and then kick? Not something that I know anything about either, didn't kick. But it's something when you read about the Winter Olympians, or if you read any golf books and about bringing that heart rate down, more so probably the Winter Olympians that shoot and they're that skiing and their heart rate's so up and then they're bringing it right down to focus on something. So maybe that's something for that first one, which is why he was under pressure physically and he has to then slow down to take a kick and it's off. So it's an interesting thing to look at. I don't know.
Sorry, when you think about the psychological pressure those two players have been under,
yeah,
Crowley and Prendergast, horrendous. Like, I'm not a social media guy, but I can only imagine everything they do is being judged and then taken apart. And you're never under more scrutiny than you are when you're standing over a kicking tee on your own. It must be the loneliest place. And as Dennis said, people get to that point in their careers where they can handle it. I would say O'Gara was the best I've seen. Kick to save the world from the touchline. I want O'Gara above anyone else. Maybe Wilkinson. But they're not there yet. So we have time to get them there. But place kicking is a non-negotiable, because if you're in a quarterfinal against Argentina, it could come down to place kicks, and we have to get it sorted. I would say
it will come down to place kicks.
Yeah, it always does. In
those big games, if you look at the last games, all not just the matches that Ireland involved in, they were 1-point games, 2-point games. So a missed kick.
We have to get this sorted. I mean, we have time, which is a good thing. I think both Prendergast and Crowley can kick. As Alison says, you know, working concertedly on coaching. I would say the best place kicker in Ireland at the moment is Nathan Doak. Best place kicking coach in the country is Richie Murphy. They're both at Ulster. Now, Richie Murphy's now a head coach. But we do whatever it takes so that way we rock up in Australia. If that means bringing Murphy onto the coaching ticket. Johnny Sexton, Is he de facto kicking coach? Is he skills coach? It's a bit unclear, you know?
Maybe he's not the...
Is Richie Murphy part of Ulster's renaissance? Because suddenly we have now Ballacoon, Stockdale, McCluskey, Tom O'Toole is in there.
Richie Murphy is... Actually, you might have played with him, Dennis, in Mary's, did you?
No, we didn't play for Mary's, but I played for him in Leinster, yeah. He was great.
I have huge respect for Murphy going back over the years, because I remember him in the AIL. He was a terror in the AIL. He went through a few clubs. I think he played for Old Belvedere.
Greystones.
Greystones and Mary's. And you saw this guy coming onto the pitch. Oh, God. You know, he kicked everything.
Yeah, yeah.
He had a bit of skill as well, but his place kicking was his thing, and he had command. So I always had respect for him. He never plays up that side of his career. He was a fine player in his day, you know. But... with Ulster, if you remember when he took over Ulster, he was under a bit of pressure the first year because the results weren't great and he was kind of bedding in. Second year, he gets his own team around him in terms of coaches and stuff and it's taken off and he's flying it. And the players you mentioned there, the Ballacoons, the Timonies, Tom Stewart, the hooker, these guys are coming into the squad now. It was only a year ago there was no Ulster player in the match 23. So Richie Murphy's kind of turned things around up there in Ireland. And Ireland needs a strong Ulster, you know. Can't just be so dependent on Leinster. It's a real positive. I would have huge time for Richie Murphy. And if we need to kind of conscript him in for the World Cup, I'd do it. Whatever it takes. No one's too big for this mission. Do you know what I mean?
And I would say, you look at France and their tradition of their nines kicking. If someone else kicks, it doesn't have to be the 10. So if we have someone else that can kick.
The problem is, Doak is a really good kicker, Alison, but he
won't. Potentially.
No, they'd be rotating the team through a tournament and stuff, but Gibson Park is going to be ahead of him, you know, assuming he's...
But it's just something to look at, because traditionally, if you look at France, you had all those guys that kicked it from 9, your 10s can kick. Yeah. So whoever...
Was Paul Thorburn at 15, was he?
Paul Thorburn knocked it over for the halfway line in 86. But if you think of the Lions in the famous 97 tour, they didn't trust Townsend with the kicking, so they put Jenkins in at full back, and he kicked everything. And that essentially, as you were saying, Dennis, that basically won the series for them. Yeah. When you boil it down, important.
That's where you find out. That's where you get caught out. Yeah. You don't have kicking, but there. It's also, I think it's fair to say, it's a skill that has to be learned. I don't mean the skill of kicking. I mean the skill of dealing with the pressure in international rugby. And both players are finding that out, and they're. I'm sure they're developing, but again, it doesn't happen overnight, and you probably have to go through some of these. You probably have to go through some of these experiences to be able to build on. I think it's more important that they are able to, you know, absorb the pressure of missing kicks in games and come through it and not have this maybe a pall hanging over them internally where it becomes an issue for them. Got to be able to turn those experiences into positives.
Arsenal have won 2-1 away to Mansfield Town in the FA Cup fifth round. They're into the quarterfinals. On the track for 4 trophies, Arsenal at the moment. See how many they're going to win. This is the Saturday panel and Off the Ball here on News Talk. Delighted to have Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller and Hugh Farrelly in studio on rugby. Is Jack Crowley... is the shirt his at the moment? Alison, going forward for you, the number 10 shirt?
God, I hate this question. I think it's...
And do we need the stability of, say, okay, shirt's yours for whatever the next year?
There's literally different ways you can look at it. Some people go, we need the 10 to be the 10, and then other people say we need to have the competition between the two of them, whoever's performing. I don't know is the answer. He is definitely a different 10, obviously, than... my mind is...
Sam Prendergast.
He's obviously a different 10. He's quite a robust 10. We don't necessarily want our 10 carrying a lot, but when he does carry, he's quite robust and he's defensively strong. Look, he did have a good game. I think the criticism of the two of them has been horrific. We wanted to support these guys and back them. So, and I cannot imagine what that level of scrutiny would have been like for those two boys. So I'm not 100% sure. Obviously, then, you know, you've got Frawley in the mix as well. You know, I was listening to Andy Dunn here one night on News Talk, and he was talking about, you know, when you're lacking confidence, how you start to sit back, you know, more in the pocket. And he was doing that. But Prendergast can do things as well that other people can't do. Like his ability to just bring it to the line sometimes and put people through I think it was Timoney's try. Like there was moments in his game that were poor. And obviously, you know, at times you're under pressure and he's forcing things. But at the same time, I see something to him that... maybe, this has been talked about so many times, that maybe it's a ceiling higher. But then Crowley comes back and he plays the way he does. Look, he missed the conversions. They're both have missed conversions. So I can't answer that question, unfortunately. I don't know. I don't know is the honest answer. I think you just have to go with who's on form at the time. And I don't know. I don't know what Dennis or you think, but I find that a really hard question, because we saw then for years the counter of that, having the 110 for years, having Sexton. And then, you know, I'd be like, let's put someone in for, you know, the Italy game. Let's play someone. Let's try and build our depth. And we didn't have anyone to do that because they didn't get that exposure. So in a way, it's great that they're both getting the exposure. They're both getting the minutes. They're both getting, like you said, those missing those conversions, dealing with the pressure, having to, you know, get their attack running. And then they're both getting these experiences. And then hopefully when it comes to like the World Cup and the important games, whoever's in that form is ready to go. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Scotland have gone 7-0 up against France at Murrayfield. Darcy Graham with the try and Finn Russell converting. Number 10. Where are you in the number 10s?
I think with one game to go, I don't think you could say it's settled at this point.
No.
I think that's probably the... I think that's about as much of an assessment you could give. I think, yeah, I think to what Alison's saying, I would agree in the sense that there is a indirect benefit of that, in the sense that both 10s have played games. Farrell's got to see both of them. Both got game time in the Six Nations. The downside, if there is a downside, is that neither of them has settled the question yet. Neither of them has, like, the fact that we're still, like, that everyone kind of scratching their head a little bit. So I would just say where it's at is it's not settled yet.
I think there's a clear solution here. I remember I was at the 2011 World Cup when we had that uncertainty that Dennis and Alison are talking about, because Sexton and O'Gara were both there. And he started off with Sexton, and then after the Italy game, he brought in Ronan. And there was just this doubt, and it spread through the squad a bit, and that was a golden chance, that World Cup. So I think we need to nail it down sooner than later. And to my mind, I think it's Crowley number one, Prendergast on the bench, and Frawley offering backup. I don't think Prendergast needs the pressure of starting anymore. I don't think his defence is up to it. I don't think it'll improve between now and the next World Cup. So I just give it to Crowley. But Prendergast, as Alison says, he's a savage player. Like, he can make a difference coming off if you're chasing a game when it really matters. That's the way I'd see it. I'd start with Crowley. I think Crowley has a bit of a presence about him. The place-kicking issues that have happened here have taken the sting out of the debate, because the people who are trumpeting Crowley and being vicious about it can't really go there anymore, because it hasn't been conclusive. But I do think he's got something about him. I said it before, I think that game against the Sharks, when there was a penalty shootout and he was giving it all of this, I kind of thought that day, okay, this kid's got something. So I would almost have him as our go-to number one, but I'd definitely bring Prendergast back into the equation, because he could do things off the bench that could make all the difference.
I've got a WhatsApp in here, 0879 180 180. Not trying to be populist by reading this, but anyway, John, Irish rugby has got an audience, not fans. An audience needs to be Caroline to keep them engaged. Fans are engaged by the game, but the real fans are being priced out of it, says Liam in Dublin. Was the atmosphere flat last night? You were there, Dennis.
I did think it was flat, actually. Yeah, I didn't think... I've read and I, you know...
Look good on TV, maybe because the game is exciting.
Yeah, and I listened back on the... I listened back on one of the highlights reels this morning, and both the commentators were refusive about the atmosphere. But I didn't feel it, I have to say, in the stadium itself. And I don't think anyone else who I spoke to had a different view. I've met a good few people at halftime, and then also at the end that I knew, and everyone sort of said the same thing. There was a couple of one thing I would say, there was a very small contingent of Welsh fans. Which always impacts the Friday night match. Wales have had a lot of hardship on the road and at home. So I'd say, you know, it's a big ask now for, if you're a Welsh supporter, are you going to spend the money? Dublin's not any cheap place to come to, particularly at Six Nations time or any time, but certainly in Six Nations time. Thursday, you'd have to take another day off work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's probably wasn't as appealing a away trip as it maybe might have been if it was over the weekend or of course, if Wales had more to play for. But I did get Wales had plenty to play for. Sorry, what I meant was if there was a feeling that this was a game where Wales were going to win, and I think even the most red-eyed Welsh fan would have struggled to justify that to themselves before the game. though their performance obviously last week, they were able to back it up this week, which might make the next match, obviously they're, I think they're home to Italy. I think the crowd will be in full voice, but when Land of My Fathers struck up, there was a real lack of singing from the crowd because there were so few Welsh in the ground, and you could really get sense of that. But I think as well that there just wasn't that sense of jeopardy from the crowd in the game. You know, if you'd asked, you know, 90%, I think the spread was 24 points yesterday. So you've most of the fans turning up thinking we're going to win this game. Not a huge amount of travelling contingent, and then if the crowd did pick up, it was because, again, obviously very nervous towards the end, and then there was a kind of an unease as opposed to a fervor in the ground.
Yeah.
So I think both those combinations, it was. I haven't been in a game in quite a while, but that was my impression.
If you went from Munster last night, you either stayed in Dublin at a huge cost or you got home at 2 a.m. or later, says Paddy, yeah, one of our texters. Another one, if Sam Prendergast went to Twickenham and did what Jack Crowley did, it'd be a done deal. So why not the same way around? You're talking about the place kicking, isn't it?
Is that what he's saying?
I think he's saying the other way around. In other words,
if Sam Prendergast had gone to Twickenham and paid the way Jack Crowley, it'd be a settled debate.
I don't know. Yeah.
I thought it was the other point. Is he not saying the other point? Is that if he'd.
Well, that's the way I interpreted it.
Okay.
Well, maybe I read it wrong.
Either way, I don't think it is settled.
Could I make an observation on the atmosphere?
You can.
Thank you. I remember being taken on a tour of the Aviva when it was just getting close to being finished. They brought all the journals around, and it was a real, you know, this is the press room, this is the whatever. I remember asking the question, saying, do you not think it's a bit small, lads? And they just kind of ignored you. I went on, and here's the whatever. The Aviva's too small. It's 51,000. It's a plastic kind of stadium. It's like a championship soccer stadium, Coventry City or something. The game's in Croke Park. You've played there, Dennis. Different level altogether. You have a bigger attendance. You can bring the price down. The prices are there so high because there's a small audience. So you've got fans rattling their jewellery as opposed to giving belly roars. You know what I mean? It, the corporate element sucks the atmosphere out of the place. And there's no solution to it because they're tied into the sponsors for that stadium. It's not a national stadium. It's the weakest of all the Six Nations stadiums.
I don't know. I remember being at the New Zealand game in 2013.
Are occasions.
Like, I just thought the Ireland soccer game when Shane Long scored, there's nothing wrong with the atmosphere that night.
Were you in Croke Park for Ireland England?
Sadly not. Seven. I was at the Ireland France game that year, but it wasn't.
Well, that's a like different level altogether.
Yeah, you know? But sure, if it was played in the Aviva, it'd be. I mean, yeah. Aviva's got a bigger capacity than Eden Park in Auckland.
The Aviva lacks the epic, you know. Like, you go to the Millennium Stadium, Twickenham even, Stade de France, you know, there has to be an element of awe about it. And the Aviva lacks that.
Did Lansdowne Road have the awe?
Lansdowne Road was a weird one because it was just so kind of archaic and, you know, it was kind of a quirky stadium.
It was a different... I'll
tell you, when we beat New Zealand in 2018, I was at the Aviva Stadium and it was absolutely heaving.
I think
time we beat New Zealand in Dublin. Like.
It's the occasion though as well. It's as I said, Ireland have been on a roll. It would have been a huge upset if they'd lost that match last night, and that's in the back of people's minds.
I think
that's,
it depends on the game. And I think that texter might have a point about, you know, fans that were in a cost of living crisis at the moment. You know, a lot of fans out there aren't going to justify the ticket price, go to Dublin when, you know, there's bills to be paid and stuff like that. So I've been at the Aviva for different types of games, you know, Leinster games and Ireland games. And it there's been different atmospheres there. I've been at games where people have been up and down nonstop to the bar where you can't see the game. You've been to the game where the people around you are really watching and absorbing it. And then, like what you said there about a lack of Welsh fans, they're always a great travelling. So without them and without that kind of, fans to fan rivalry, that does have an impact.
But there's a reason, Alison, why the atmosphere from the Irish was so good in Twickenham. Because it's not the corporate guys, it's people who are just going there roaring on their team. And you see it at the World Cups. The atmosphere in France for the last World Cup was off the charts.
And I don't even think it's to do with the stadium, because I've been in really old stadiums and, you know, Bet Down stadiums with big seats, but there was great atmosphere. I don't know.
But it's the capacity that's priced the atmosphere out of it, I think. I think that's where the problem lies.
I think 50,000 is enough.
Jesus.
I would probably agree with John on that.
We could sell 120,000 tickets to an All Blacks game, you know, in the right circumstances, 2018.
Just like you're saying, we could sell the All-Ireland three times over. Of course you could.
Yeah, but why limit it? Well, it's too late now, but 50,000 is too small.
Do you know what? Definitely, just something that struck me there. I don't know why. I don't get the same messages anymore going, can you get me tickets from friends and...
They just don't want to go?
I don't know. It's just, I've just thought of that now, like, used to have a long time.
The success thing, I'm definitely seeing through channels, there's much more tickets on offer. Like, I mean, the Grand Slam game in 2023, Viva couldn't get a ticket for hell nor high water. Now, for Scotland next week, you get a ticket pretty much, no problem. I think, yeah. I think there's a big difference. And I think it's people going, you know what, is this value?
Yeah.
I think that might be an issue. But you were there at Croke Park. I mean, was there any comparison to that night at Croke Park to anything you've ever been involved in?
No, but like, I don't think it's a fair comparison. I don't think playing a team that have lost 20 something games in the bounce in Six Nations.
Which is in terms of the stadium. I mean, was Croke Park a better place to play rugby than Lansdowne?
Yeah, but again, that it was also the novelty of it. Yeah. Like, that was the first time any rugby had been played there. There was the England. Like, there was so many different dimensions to that. It's just not a real, I don't think it's a fair comparison because there was also issues with playing there as well from a rugby perspective. The pitch was a fair bit back from the stand because they actually, obviously the pitch is smaller, but the stand itself, the verticals in the stand, they're actually set far back. So if the Croke Park as a stadium holding rugby was not in on top of the players, like for example, the way Cardiff is. So, I think the novelty factor of playing in Croke Park was exceptional. It was fantastic to be playing in there. And fans really enjoyed the experience of going there. But I think over time people would have, as they probably were at some point, it's a bit far away and we need something a bit more intimate. And there's always something. But I actually think it's more to do with the game. I think it's more to do with who they're playing.
Did it pick up on the 63rd minute when it was 19-17? Was there any bit of a pickup at that point?
There was, as I said, there was more people were anxious, I think, so people got into it. But that was just my experience of it last night. I can't say it's like that all the time because I'm not there all the time.
Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller and Hugh Farley with us for the Saturday panel here on Off the Ball on News Talk. Scotland 7, France 0 still at Murrayfield, 17 minutes gone. Another texture on 0879 180 180. I agree with the previous text and Dennis Hickey was there. Atmosphere was flat. Very few Welsh. One guy in my row had 6 pints and several toilet trips. And the tickets priced at genuine fans. Exact count of the pints. Can we have a temporary terrace? Didn't miss a home game for 20 years in the 90s and noughties. Ireland lost most games. Still, the atmosphere is better, says Paul Mayo. Was it the schoolboy terrace or the schoolboy section?
Well, all the terraces.
Yeah.
Terrace in the east end, terrace there, in the north and north and south terraces were all terrace. And then the front of the east end was terrace.
France are in for a try. It looks like BLBRE has got it. 7-5, Scotland lead. France got a conversion to come. What are we looking to see then against Scotland next week? Any changes in personnel or style or anything you'd like to see next week?
Well, I think there will be changes next week. I think that's that's what they're doing in this tournament. And that was... That certainly would have impacted, as I said, the cohesiveness of the team last night. So I would expect to see, I would expect to see them finish with what Farrell assesses is quote unquote strongest team for this game. I think there was some both in the Italy games and the game last night. There was an element of wanting to see players play, wanting to give a chance to players playing. I think we'll see for the final match his shakeout of who he thinks are the incumbents at the moment. It doesn't mean it's his team for
Australia,
his next team forever.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we'll see next week.
What about Alison? What do you want to see next week, or personnel or style or anything?
I suppose maybe just to cut out the inaccuracies, or just at times last night we probably pushed passes that were on, or Gibson Park kind of for the intercept, just pushing passes, forcing things a little bit. The inaccuracies around, high balls. We probably, at times last night, we looked at Rhys Samad at 15 and he probably played most of his rugby on the wing, and at times maybe we could have tested him out a bit more with his positioning. So, look, that's nothing got to do with next week because that was last night. But I suppose it's cleaning up those things, under the high balls, the maybe knock-ons or just the small inaccuracies that don't allow you to get into that, comprehensive lead that we could have had at different stages. And we want to obviously look for improvements in the place kicking, because that would have helped us build up a bit of our lead. The defence inaccuracies, we saw Carey's try and things like that. You'd ideally not want to see your prop and your winger in that much space, you know, defensively. So that's something that, you know, they'll try and iron out, just the inaccuracies. And I'm looking forward to seeing who the two wingers are, just being a winger myself. But yeah, nothing too major, maybe a little bit more deception and attack. I felt at times maybe, you know, some of our option runners were too early, so you knew it wasn't going to them, and Wales could just push out and defend. So stuff like that, just a little bit more options in attack.
Conversions over, Scotland 7, France 7. Well, we have two wingers in studio here, Dennis and Alison. For a young boy or girl like listening into the show today, or their coaches listening in, I know the game has changed, but are there fundamentals for a winger? You know, the things you need to do to improve your game, improve to be the best you can be?
Yes. Yeah. I'd say the game has changed so much in the last, like, what you need to be a winger 50 years ago, 20 years ago, now is has really changed. And I'd say the biggest change has been the tactical kicking and the offensive and the defensive kicking. So there's way more tactical kicking by all teams. I was trying to think about this. I'm not sure it was pioneered by Joe Schmidt. Certainly there was a big change when he took over. Like, this was something that Ireland brought into their game, and then a lot of other teams really developed. I felt a lot of teams then developed a kicking and a kick chase game, kicking to regain the ball. And I think for wingers, that is kind of one of the core skills now of the game. That was not that wasn't the case 20 years ago. So being able to kick defensively, kick offensively and regain the ball. You can see, like, for example, for next week, we want more of England as opposed to, I think last night we got a little bit more of what we got in the French game. It wasn't for lack of commitment, just the execution wasn't as good. But if you're a winger, you have to have that bit in your game, and that you didn't have to have that as much in your game. If you were JJ Williams or in the 70s, it was about speed, out and out speed. That's all it was really about, speed and finishing off tries. In the 2000s, it was more about getting more involved in the game, maybe appearing at first receiver, second receiver, that sort of stuff, and doing more, following the ball on the inside for trail running. That was kind of one of an added dimension that was added, I think, in that period of time. And at the moment, on top of that, is certainly in the last 5 years, 10 years, but particularly, you know, every team does it now, is this kicking game where teams kick a lot more to regain the ball. One anecdote on that, I had a colleague of mine from the US who took to the game last night. He was really keen to see a Six Nations game. Never seen a game before. But very knowledgeable in sport, all types of American sports. So I don't know if you've ever tried to explain the game of rugby to someone who
is off his feet.
which I had tried to do, which says a lot. Like, it's a complicated game to try to explain to someone who doesn't understand all the rules, because there's so many variances. And anyway, one of the things, and he was very adept, and he really kind of got the game quickly. But one of the things he kept asking me during the game and after the game is, why do they keep kicking the ball away? So I was trying to explain it. And then by the end of the game, I was going, to be honest, I don't know why. I couldn't defend it, because they weren't getting the ball back. It's such a, it's very binary tactic. You kick it, you have to get it back. You don't get it back, give the ball away, and everyone's like, why did they kick it away? Get it back, like they did against England. And it's a real potent offensive skill.
12-7 to France now, second try. 14-7 conversion has come as well.
I would say, if you look at a player like, you know, if you're a young kid and you want to have your, you need to be able to defend in space, and that's maybe one criticism I would have of Lowe. If I see him in open space, I would be worried. Where you look at Balakoon, and obviously his sevens background, playing a lot of sevens in open space, his ability to defend one-on-one, it's a very difficult position to defend. You know, I know 13 traditionally was, but I think the wing is very, very difficult in the modern game. Your aerial skills, and I think if you see, you know, young kids that are playing GA and rugby, like, they should stay playing it to develop those aerial skills as well, because that's really important. Not just your ability to kick, but, you know, your fielding. You look at BRA, really good in the air, defensively sound. And if you look at, he's my favourite winger at the moment, if you haven't noticed, but his ability, like Dennis said, to kick and retrieve it. You don't know what he's going to do, but he gets the ball back. Obviously, your evasion skills. But if you look at Balakoon last night, he's still able to run an arc on people. But
Yeah, and just, you know, that strength to stay on your feet if you're isolated or to put them players down. But I think, you know, good aerial skills, good defence, and just constantly looking for somewhere to pop up, and as you know, just don't stay out there if your coach allows you to roam, because some coaches don't.
Last word to you, Hugh Farrelly. Scotland on next week, what are you looking to see? And obviously this is the week when a lot of talk about Andy Farrell maybe sitting down after the Six Nations to speak to the RFU. Should that be the case?
Yeah, well, in terms of Farrell's future, I'd be very much in favour of the, you know, the last dance kind of narrative, where he builds up to the World Cup and then moves on. And thank you for his service, because he's been a phenomenally good coach. I think there's a shelf life for coaches, and I think the next World Cup is about the right time. I'm dying to see O'Gara in that position, personally. I think he'd be excellent. And I think Farrell, if you give Farrell an extension, right, I think, Dennis, you remember when Eddie O'Sullivan got an extension before 07, it puts a lot of pressure on, because if you do well at the World Cup, say first semi-final or whatever, well, what's next? If you flop at the World Cup, you're stuck with a guy, there'd be a massive outcry, a massive call for change. So personally, and I think that's the way it's heading, the language around it seems to be heading towards the squad is aging as well. One last hurrah, get to this point and then go out in a high. That would be my ideal scenario. In terms of Scotland next week, I would say go out in a high in this championship too. I think Dennis is right. I think he'd revert to the Twickenham type team, Van der Fleer, Dan Sheehan, maybe Joe McCarthy coming back in. In terms of what you want to see, the attack wasn't great last night. That's got to improve. It looked good against England, but maybe England's defence was shocking. So place kicking and the scrum, we have time to get the scrum right, but we need to start seeing improvement. And if it doesn't improve, we'll have to look at making change. Now, I would say one thing quickly, the Tomatu selection was, I love those kind of selections. They're looking at stuff now. I thought he did well. So there's going to be a bit of teething problems there.
Dennis, you want the last word?
I want the last word. It's important. I just want to shift very quickly to under 12 GAA, Renly Gael's match against O'Toole's this morning, or this afternoon, which I missed. I want to shout out to them. Apparently it was a mighty game for both sides. So
who won? Doesn't matter.
Great game all around.
Exactly. Well, that's the most important.
Football is the winner.
Girls.
Oh, girls. Well, don't even better.
Yeah.
Scotland scored. It's all happening here. Well done to the kids. Scotland 12, France 14, and a conversion attempt to come. I'm going to keep your eye up to speed in that. Dennis Hickey, Alison Miller, thank you so much for coming
in. Thank you. No problem.
The flying wingers on one side of the studio and the other flying winger, Hugh Farrelly, on the other side. We have had a great Saturday panel chat on rugby, and we got hurling to talk about after this here on Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. We're on air till 5.
The Saturday panel. On Off the Ball.
With Optimum Nutrition, the official performance nutrition partner of the IRFU.
This is News Talk.